Blog Talk Radio.
Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show the note guy, Scott Carson, to discuss real estate, distressed debt, marketing, and raising private capital. And this is going to be a pretty decent conversation because I know next to nothing about real estate. I did get involved with I live in a college town, and I did get involved at one time with a dorm apartment that pretty much scarred me for life. So Scott is going to have to walk me through a lot of this. So he's got some great stories that he can share with us. Excuse me. We have a lot of pollen here. Scott is in Texas. I'm in Louisiana. We are flooding. We've had just horrible, horrible rains and all kinds of things going on. So if we lose you, we'll come back to it. And if I have to cough, I'll just mute. So I'm so sorry. But in the meantime, let me tell you about Scott. He is the CEO of WeCloseNotes.com. He is a distressed note buyer, a real estate investor, entrepreneur and podcast host, and has been an active real estate investor since 2002. And basically, he focuses on the distressed mortgage and note industry since 2008, where he buys and sells non-performing mortgages directly from banks and hedge funds on properties all across the country. Today, he is here to share tips and advice as well as some very entertaining stories. Scott, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success, and let's see if we can power through this.
Hey, good morning, Denise. I guess you got the weather that was here yesterday that was headed your way.
We do.
So.
Yep. It's very wet here. Lake Griffiths in my backyard is on the rise, let me tell you.
Well, hey, you know, we'll work through it. But, hey, I'm honored to be here today, and thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I have friends that are real estate investors, and they'll tell me stories that I just have me going, what? And to me, it seems like you guys kind of work magic, and it's a huge, huge industry. I mean, real estate has always been performing, non-performing. There's a lot of myth around it. There's a lot of, angst around. I have angst. I love the idea of investing in property. But let me tell you, after that dorm thing, I kid you not, I got to the dorm one. It was really an apartment building, but it was set up as dorms because it was literally across the street from the university. I pulled in one day, Scott, I'm not joking. Police were pulled out, pulled up all over there. There was a Burger King next door. And I said, what in the world is going on? One of my tenants, who I had no idea was pregnant, had dumped a baby in the trash.
Wow.
The baby was alive. And after that, I told my former husband, I want out. You can take care of this. I'm not doing this anymore. And we were upside down in it anyway. But when I tell you I'm a bit scarred from that thing, I'm not kidding. But I love the idea of real estate investing. And I don't think I've actually given up. But along with probably half of our audience, need some guidance and some pointers. So here you are.
Here I am, exactly. And, a lot of people, back in 2008, 9, and 10 have gone through some sort of financial hiccup that led to a real estate, mishap, when we had the market crash like we did. At the peak in 2010, we had 15 million homeowners that were underwater, that, they owed more on their mortgage, they're behind. And, the market's rebounded. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I mean, a lot of people have gone through short sales or foreclosures or bankruptcies and things like that. And, we have ups and downs in every market. And we've been pretty blessed for the last, 9 years of pretty much continuous increases in value where most of the markets have recovered. But the thing you got to keep in mind is, real estate investors make their money on the buy. And I made a mistake early on as a real estate investor. I came in and I paid something at value. Now, at full value, real estate investors, you should not be buying at full value. You should be buying something at a substantial discount. That way, if something does happen, you've got the ability to dump that asset and still make money or work through it and have cash flow for a while. But Yeah, I don't usually find good properties right next to Burger King's. It's just like a little rougher crowd. But if you're a real estate investor, the thing is you invest where you know. If you know your backyard, great, invest your backyard. If you don't, if there's not deals in your backyard, like I'm here in Austin, Texas, it's a very competitive market. I haven't bought anything here in Austin in over a decade, but I have bought several, hundred, if not a thousand assets across the country in different states because I use the same type of team members that I would use here if I was here in Austin, realtors. I leverage local real estate investment clubs to find other experts and rehab and general contractors. I look for good title companies. I leverage my network of contacts across the country for really good referrals for those type of people if they can't find something. So that's the one of the biggest thing is I think so many people try to get into real estate and try to do everything themselves because they've fallen in love with the fictional TV shows of HG, flip this house and all that good stuff. You can't do everything yourself. You've got to put a team together. You've really got to leverage other people to really have success in real estate. That's not saying you can't go out and buy the property down the street and fix and flip it and do a lot of the work yourself. That's fine, but it's just not going to be a long-term wealth-building process because if you're doing everything, trying to do everything yourself, you're going to end up missing some things and you're not an expert on title. You're not an expert on a variety of things. Let the experts do what they can do and oftentimes you'll be a lot happier and you'll also make more money and have a better, not just a return on investment, but a return on time because you're able to do the most productive thing at any given moment. Does that make sense, Denise?
It does. And I can tell you, I can hear the audience going, but if you have to pay other people to do all this stuff, how do you make, better money? Look, I went through this in my own business when I first started out, web developer, virtual assistant, then to OBM. Now I own an agency, digital agency. That was my attitude in the very beginning. I've got to do all this myself. I can't afford to pay other people. Back then we didn't even have the means to build a team because I started in 2001, 2002, and the internet was not what it is now. I mean, it was practically dinosaur stuff we're talking about. But, and I had the same attitude I'm afraid, I hate to admit this, for way too long. But once I started not doing all the grunt work and bringing in people, who could do it much more quickly, much more efficiently, I went, so that's how that works. So let's talk a bit more about that it was an epiphany for me. I mean, I was looking at the money that was coming in. What do I have to pay in taxes, self-employed? You have to look at all of these things. But bringing on a team, I find when working with other, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs is almost the last thing they want to do. Can you help out with that kind of mindset?
So in real estate, everybody gets paid when you close. That's the biggest thing. I'm not paying a realtor a commission to go find me properties. I pay when we close on the deals.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Title companies aren't going to get paid until you close on real estate. So that's the big difference is that most people realize that there's work on the front end that they're not going to get paid until something closes. So that's one of the biggest things. Now, fix and flippers, I mean, you're going to have to pay your rehab crew and do some things that way. But if you're buying right, there's a lot of great ways to actually buy the real estate or buy the investment property and even get your rehab included if you're buying right. So one of the things that we do, since we were buying debt, buying non-performing notes, I'm probably going to throw another runky wrench in the show here, but we're buying the mortgages on non-performing notes, on people who aren't paying their mortgage on time. But the fact that these people aren't paying on time gives us the flexibility. It also gives us a huge, huge opportunity that the bank will sell the debt to us at a big discount. So we're not usually paying more than 50 cents on the dollar for value to buy the mortgage. Now, when we buy the mortgage, we now become the bank, and then we reach out to the homeowners, the borrowers, and say, hey, I know you couldn't pay the bank. You were 12, 24 months behind. They wanted the full 2 years of payments. I don't need the full 2 years of payments. Can you start paying your existing payment now? Can you start paying a little bit extra each month? So giving you some ideas on this, if the house is worth 100 and they owe 100, let's just make it that simple, we would probably pick up that note for 50 grand. At 50 cents of the dollar. That alone gives us a lot of flexibility to maybe have an investor fund at 55 or 60 cents on the dollar to put 5 or 10% in an account that we can use for expenses or workouts or foreclosure costs. And then we use that money that we get a little bit extra, because it's still a good return on investment to the investor on the back end when we return the funds plus a good return to them. So we buy this debt, big discount, become the bank, and then we're working, because the borrower still owes $100,000, we're working with them to get you rocking and rolling. So let's work some numbers here. Let's say a normal mortgage payment on a $100,000 house is, let's just say, $800 a month, $750 to $800 a month. Well, if we can get the borrower to start paying on time again and they make 12 months of payments, 12 times 800, what is that, $9,600 is coming in 12 months. Well, $9,600 over a $60,000 investment, if we had investor funded, is a pretty good return on investment immediately, right? You know, what are the numbers on that? Let me calculate that real fast. I usually have that, but off the top of my head, my coffee's not kicked in yet this morning.
So I've been drinking coffee this morning, and I don't usually, so I'm walking around going zit, zit. I was up all night listening to lightning and thunder and talking my dog down from the ceiling fan. It was a rough
night.
There you
go. It was a rough night. There you go. So basically, if we get them to start making that $800 a month payment and we borrowed $60,000 from somebody, that's a 16% return on investment just alone on the payment stream. And our goal with us buying the debt is to get the, like I said, get the bar paid on time. Because after 12 months of on-time payments, now we can sell that note back to Wall Street, back to a self-directed IRA investor, somebody who's looking for a good return on investment, like $85,000. So now, if we borrowed $60,000, sold it at $85,000, we just added another $25,000 to our pocket, plus the $9,600 in cash flow. So if you figure that, add the numbers, $25,000 plus $9,600 in cash flow, that's a total of $34,600 coming in on a $60,000 investment. Now, if we pay back the investor when we sell the note off, which is great, and let's say we split that $34,600. So we're basically giving the investor a $17,300 profit divided by their $60,000 in investment. That's roughly about a 28% return to our funding partner. That's a pretty good day at the bank.
Yeah, it is.
Some invest. You know what I mean? That may take 12 months, it may take 13 months, but that's still a pretty good annualized return to do that. Now, let's say the borrower doesn't make payments on time and they continue to not work with us. That's fine. We just use that extra $10,000 that we had funded between the $50,000 purchase price for the note and the $60,000 funding amount. We use that $10,000 to foreclose, and that'll vary by state. In Texas, it may be $1,000 to foreclose, and in Florida, maybe $6,000 to foreclose. It just varies on a state-by-state basis. But we foreclose, a lot of times we'll sell that property at the foreclosure auction for 80 to 85 cents on the dollar. Or we'll use that $10,000 to negotiate like a cash for keys with a homeowner. Like, listen, you're going to foreclose. We're going to foreclose on you. How about we give you $2,000 just to walk away and sign the property over to walk away? That way, that foreclosure doesn't hurt your credit. You can go out and get out from beyond this nightmare of a house that you can't afford anymore. And a lot of times we're pretty successful in doing that cash for keys, or as we also call it, like a deed in lieu as well. Sometimes we'll offer up a short sale to the borrowers where they can list the property for sale, and if it's in decent condition, and then move it on the MLS and agree to take a little bit of a discount off that $100,000 or so, sell it at 80, 85 cents and still make good money on it. So the beautiful thing is we've got a lot of ways to make money on the note business besides just fixing and flipping. So it gives us a lot of flexibility to work with that borrower, depending on whatever their country western song is of excuses. Okay.
Right.
A lot of people that are getting into the real estate industry these days are fantasized. They want to be fixing and flippers. And the REO, the real estate owned market, foreclosures that are on the MLS are often overpriced because of the demand for those. So we see a lot of new investors that get in, they overpay for property, and they then over-rehab the property. That's one of the biggest mistakes we see new real estate investors make, is they rehab it for what they would want in a property to live in. And if it's going to be a rental property, does that make sense?
Hang on. No granite counters. You don't need tile floors or wood floors. You just need to make it livable, and then they can put their own stamp on it. Is that about right?
It's about right, depending on what your goal is. I do know some rehabbers that they're buying and they're rehabbing it in bulk, you know, so they do put the granite in once so they don't have to replace it every, 2 to 3 years. They do put the You know, they do put the tile floors in because it's easier to clean than carpet, or they'll rather put laminates in a kitchen versus tile because the laminate's pretty easy to put in and replace. What we're talking about kind of is systems. What kind of systems investors put in? And that's one of the biggest things that I am anti the HGTVs, the flip this houses, because they over-dramatize what you need to do. You don't need to put all those fancy upgrades in if it's going to be a rental property where laminate and regular carpet will work. You know, you got to know your neighborhood, and you got to know, make sure you're buying right. And this is why I tell new investors, one of the most valuable things that you can do is to educate yourself. And by educating yourself, I'm not saying go pay 20, 30 grand to a guru. You don't need that. What the best way to get started to really understand the market and understand some of the different things that are going on, because each city, each state has a little bit different laws and time frame for stuff, is to go to your local real estate investment club. Every city's got a couple of them, or one, two, or 10. It just depends on how big the city is. And in those real estate investment clubs, you're going to rub elbows with people who are out there pulling the trigger. They're out there rehabbing properties. And those are some of the best people to pick their brain and actually ask them questions and seek counsel versus asking for advice from your next door neighbor who doesn't have a clue about flipping houses.
Well, that makes sense. And I didn't realize that there were clubs like this, but that also makes sense, you know, now that you mention it. Let me go back a step or two. So let's go back to the poor distressed homeowner. My thinking or my guess would be that when you come to them and say, okay, listen, we're now the bank, we can let you stay in your home if you're going to make these payments. Do most of them make the payment, or do you find out that they're just not going to be able to do it?
It's a case-by-case basis. The national average for note investors, and what I do is if you buy 10 notes, you probably get 3 to 4 to reinstate or modify, do a loan modification with you. 3 to 4 will sign the property over to you and walk away in a deed in lieu or cash or keys like we talked about. The other 4 to 6 you're going to end up foreclosing on, and that's what we see. I mean, we've got a pretty good above average ratio of getting people to reinstate or modify. You know, we want to keep them in their house, as I like to say. We like to rehab the borrower if we can, because it's a win for us where we don't have to pay repair costs. We're not paying taxes. We're sure as heck not paying attorney fees to foreclose. So it means we're getting cash flow almost immediately versus waiting. But you're still going to have people that just don't answer their phones. They don't check their mail anymore. They're trying to drag this living for free as long as they can until an attorney steps in. So we still end up having to foreclose or send our loans to legal, to a real estate attorney in that state to start the foreclosure process about 35 to 45% of the time. So,
That's pretty amazing. Numbers. You would think that if somebody has the opportunity to stay in their home, they would run it, run and grab it. But I also understand what you just said about, they're hiding, they're done. They've been terrorized, they don't know what to do, they're scared, they just don't. You don't know what to do in a situation like that.
Yeah, and that's the case. Is most people, unfortunately, we live in a highly uneducated society when it comes to finances. People are very budget mindset when they're getting their first house. They're not the most astute borrower. You know, they're buying, especially, we see this happen in a lot of cities across the country in new builds, where they'll go in and buy a new house for $500 to $1,000 down, and that's the mortgage payment is what they can afford based on their budget. Well, in 3, 6, or 9 months, when the taxes change on that house, when that now that county's valuing that property for a full house and a lot versus just a lot, their taxes will go up quite a bit. And people, are often not prepared for that. So we see a lot of defaults in those new build areas where people, weren't told that their taxes were going to double or triple, in the next year. We also see it where people are counting on like overtime and working extra hours. When that overtime gets cut back, that they now don't have the money to make the mortgage payment. I mean, it's scary enough right now, Denise, in America, in today's America, May 2019, 1 out of 10 borrowers are already 30 days later than mortgage across the country.
Oh, no. Seriously,
yeah.
It's that bad?
It's that bad.
And this is after 2008? I mean, there's no reason for this, no excuse for it.
Well, what you have happening, you have a variety of things that are going on in the country. You still have taxes that are adjusting. You have people that are still getting laid off from their job. Their hours are being cut back. Medical expenses, I mean, is a big cause for that. Divorce at an all-time high is also another financial hiccup that people go through. So there's a lot of reasons that some people go late. It's just not that they're a deadbeat and they don't want to pay. And that's kind of what our job is when we're buying something, is trying to figure out what the situation is with the borrower and trying to really create a win-win scenario that we can keep them in their house if we can. And that's a win for us. It's a win for the bank because they're selling us the debt at a discount. They're getting their money back, or a chunk of it back, so they can go do what they need to do. And it's a win for us because we're buying an asset that is a discount, that's in a house that's worth $100 that we control for 50, 60 cents on the dollar. So.
And I know banks don't want to own real estate. That's not what they're in business for. But let me go back again to what you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. We were talking about these distressed buyers. A question popped up in my head, and I probably know the answer to it, but let me ask it anyway. So you were saying that when you go to these people, sometimes you'll say, okay, you know, we're going to, you know, rework your note. Can you start now? Do they have to go through, they're already in the house. They've already been approved at some point. Do they have to still go through the loan application process? I mean, how does that work? Because I would think that they're done. I mean, they're shot.
Well, that's a good question. If they're already in the house, what we will do is we'll ask them some questions. And each investor fund is a little bit different. Some people will make the borrower jump through a lot of questions and, you know, make sure they can afford some things. My team is, we're pretty straight to the point. Like, hey, what can you afford? Let's be honest here. You know, you're 2 years behind, you're 6 months behind. Are you working? If you're working, okay, great. Can you afford to start making the existing payments, what they were at payment on file? I don't care about the 2 years or the 6 months yet. Let's not worry about that yet. Can you start paying on time today? Because most banks, when they have a borrower who's behind, they won't allow them to start making the payment. They want them to make that payment plus the 6 months that they're behind on. And most people don't have
right.
that money in savings, right?
Right, and that's why they're running scared. They're like, I don't even want to talk to you people anymore.
Exactly. So that's what we're different with. Like, listen, we want to keep you in the house. If you can start making that existing payment, great. Let's get you doing that. Now, can you bring a little bit extra to the table? Can you bring $100 a month? Can you bring $200 a month? Can you do that for a while to get caught back up? Now, if you can start making – one of the big things, we can get somebody making payments for 12 months straight. We'll forgive a lot of the back payments. Yeah, I'll just say, listen, we'll forgive that back payments. If you make payments on time for 12 months, and for every $100 extra you make, we'll forgive $200. You know, we'll do a 2-for-1 aspect to that, because you got to realize, if they owe $100,000 on a house, but we bought it at 60, we bought that note at 60, we've got a lot of flexibility to forgive a couple grand here or there that's above the value of the house that we probably would never see anyway. So we, you know, this is where we like to make the joke that the pen is mightier than the actual hammer when it comes to rehabbing. Because it gives us, you know, with us buying the debt, we hold all the keys. We have the flexibility to negotiate with the homeowner in a variety of ways. We could reduce their payment if we wanted to, if it made sense. We could reduce the interest rate. You know, we talked about forgiving payments. We could do an adjustable rate mortgage, start them at 2%, and then increase it over time to get it back up to a normal market rate to give them an opportunity to get caught back up. We could change it from a 30-year mortgage to a 40-year mortgage if we wanted to.
Oh, you're kidding.
You know,
I didn't know there
we
was
could do all
such
those.
A thing.
Oh, yeah, there's actually, get this now, there's actually 50-year mortgages out there. I wouldn't buy those, but yes, there are 50-year mortgages.
You're just paying rent until you die. That's all you're doing.
Basically.
Oh, my God.
You know, but the thing is that, well, you got to look at it this way. Every McDonald's that you see is on a 99-year lease. It's basically a 99-year mortgage for the most
right.
part.
Oh,
but
that's
the
crazy.
Thing. That's what I love about the note business is we can be very creative with our borrowers. We can try to really help them out if they really want to be helped. And those that don't want help, okay, they'll just deal with our attorneys and go from there. So.
Right. So, Scott, I have to ask you, how did you get involved in this? Like I say, I've always been mildly to moderately interested in real estate investing, and I've always been scared stupid of it. So I just don't do it. But I do have a couple of friends who are very, very successful like you are at what they're doing. And I'm starting to pay attention because, you know, land is finite. We just have so much of it. And everybody needs a home. You're right.
Right.
So, you know, it seems like a very good place to be. I'm still scared stupid of it. So just so you know, I'm not joking. I'm not jumping anytime soon, but I love the idea that you're able to really go in and try to help people, which has not really been my impression of a lot of real estate investors. You know, it's not the impression you get. And I don't watch TV. I don't watch rehab shows. I don't even have cable. I cut it years ago. So there's no garbage in, no garbage out. But I do understand how people could find that, you know, kind of sexy and kind of exciting. I wouldn't be that people. I would not be one of those at all.
You're right. Well, that's the thing is we tell people, I mean, you're obviously, you've got your background. You've been snake bit. And I was
you
snake
have no
bit.
Idea.
I was
I could tell you stories about that dorm that would make you want to throw up. It was just horrible.
I got some whoppers. I once rehabbed the worst roach infestation property in Salt Lake City. I bought a note on a house in Dayton where the bar hadn't responded to anything in 3 years, and we foreclosed. And then when the realtor went in to change the locks, we found him hanging in the closet. I guess he'd hung himself 4 years earlier. Nobody found about it. I bought an eightplex in North Carolina that turned out to be a working brothel.
My story is bad, but not those. Not they come close, but not that bad. Right. So you win.
But it's okay. So how did I get started? Well, I graduated from college in 2001, and you know, I started in the finance industry. Is making good money, and we bought our first house. And I say we because I was married at the time. So we bought our first house, and then our realtor was like, hey, you should be real estate investors. You got great credit. It's a great time to buy. So we bought two more properties at full value with the idea that we're going to be landlords. And in Austin, Texas, we've got a small little computer company here called Dell. All right? Rhymes with hell. And that was who our tenants were.
Yeah, I spent some time with them on the phone the other day. I was not happy.
Yeah, there you go. Flash forward a couple months. In a matter of 60 days, I get laid off from my position, and Dell lays off a lot of their staff because they move a lot of operations to Tennessee and other places. So now we're trying to make three first mortgages and three second mortgages on a private school teacher salary because our two tenants got laid off as well, so they weren't making their mortgage payments or their rent payments to us. So I was a deadbeat borrower. I was literally struggling to do whatever I could. Well, I was trying to get a job, but I was like many other people looking for jobs here in Austin at the time. And so I did whatever I had to do. And so we were lucky enough to get rid of the two properties. We were able to keep our primary residence from doing a loan modification with Wells Fargo, who was the mortgage company at the time. And I just did what I had to do for 6 months. Well, I got back into finances. I started becoming a banker at JPMorgan Chase. A buddy of mine that I'd worked with early on and started a mortgage company with a couple of real estate investors here in Austin that were traveling the country, speaking at these different real estate expos and real estate seminars and conferences. And I went and had lunch with them and realized I still had the real estate bug. Yeah, I'd fallen flat on my face with those first two investment properties, but I still had that dream. And so I said, okay, let's do this. So I joined them, and then for the next 4 years, as I was traveling the country and helping with the mortgage industry, I was able to sit in the back of the room of a lot of seminars and learn a lot of information. And basically I had a 4-year apprenticeship in real estate with the real estate investors that were part of the mortgage company. So I learned creative financing. I learned owner financing. I learned about distressed mortgages and started taking what I was learning at these events and started implementing it a little at a time. And by the time that 4 years comes by in 2008, I left the mortgage company just as the big debacle was starting to kick off and was focused full time on real estate. And my mentors and another investor I knew said, hey, Scott, this is a perfect time for you to be 100% into the note business, because with all the banks going out of the business and the foreclosures, it was very similar to the Resolution Trust Corporation, the savings and loan scandal, the RTC days of the 80s, where most of them had made their money buying bad paper. And so that's basically what I did. I stopped doing my fix and flips. I stopped doing rentals that I picked up, I sold those off, and I just started focused on dialing for dollars and started calling banks and real estate hedge funds to find out what kind of mortgages they had that they were looking to sell. And, you know, 10 years later now, I've closed on over $1 billion in debt. I was a 2014 Note Educator of the Year. bought in 35 different states and spoken all across the country and then internationally as well on note investing. And it's just been an amazing roller coaster ride since all that kicked off in 2008, 9, and 10.
And see, I have to ask you, was there a point or multiple points where you looked at yourself in the mirror and went, "You're nuts"? Did you ever have those moments? As entrepreneurs,
yes.
Solopreneurs, we all have those moments like, what the heck
were
you thinking? And it's more often than you would think.
Oh, every day sometimes. I'm like, what am I thinking? I'm a goofball. I mean, don't get me wrong, the peaks and valleys, everybody has peaks and valleys. It's just the beautiful thing is that my valleys now are higher than my peaks ever were. And so the thing, one of the biggest decisions that I made came in 2010. I'd been through a divorce. I had another business partner on a real estate stuff that went bad. And I had a couple deals in Austin that were just eating my lunch. And so I was sitting one night in March of 2010 watching ESPN, and they were advertising baseball season kicking off, Major League Baseball season. They had a commercial where these guys are like, you may remember, like, oh, hot dog $8, beer $5, traveling to all the Major League Baseball parks with your son, priceless. And I was like, man, I'm such a baseball. I would love to travel the country. I said, I wonder what it would look like to do that if I could do that this year. And so I literally pulled up, went online to ESPN. I started jotting down when the games were. If I were to make this fictional trip across the country to go to every Major League Baseball park, it would take like 26 weeks to do it. And this is the power in putting down your goals. So I literally wrote this down. I said, I would love to do this by someday. And at the same time, I was already closing note deals quite a bit, and I was posting them to Facebook and LinkedIn and writing blogs and doing some videos on YouTube about it. Well, within the next 3 weeks, I had 4 real estate investment clubs reach out to me and ask me if I wanted to come speak at their investment club. And I'm like, yeah, sure. When are you thinking? And the dates that they gave me and the cities that they were in lined up perfectly for this fictional baseball tour. Fictional, total lined up. And I believe it's divine intervention. So I was like, okay, God, thank you. I hear what you're saying. I need to get out of town. So I sold everything in Austin, sold my house, sold all the furniture. I sold basically everything except my truck and my dog. And my friends were
the
like,
dog,
you're an idiot.
Thanks you.
You're going to be – yes, I had Princess for 17 years. And so Princess and I jumped in my truck, and we drove around the country. We expected it to take like 30 weeks. It turned into 3.5 years. Of traveling and investment clubs reaching out to me and asking me to come speak. I went to Florida and I spent what I thought would be 2 weeks in Florida. I'm spending like 4 months in Florida because I was going from bank to bank to bank, and they were literally opening up their portfolio and giving me lists to cherry pick from. And it was absolutely an amazing ride. It was just amazing. I put myself out there and it revolutionized my business because I kind of built a following in a grassroots city by city effort for the most part. And
it sounds like you had an awful lot of faith in whatever your internal voice was. And I think many of us as solopreneurs / entrepreneurs, there is a difference, and I won't go into the difference here, but there is. One is not necessarily the other. But anyway, I do the same thing, Scott. I mean, if my voice is talking to me in the back of the head, and to my audience, I hear voices. I often talk back to them, too. It's like, oh, thanks. That's a great idea.
Right.
I'm going to go do that. It sounds like you have kind of the same thing, which leads me back to another question, and I think you almost answered it, but then I interrupted you, so I apologize for that. But my question was, do you go looking for properties, which you just said you do, or do property, distressed owners now come looking for you? I mean, how do you – that's part of the marketing, I think, that we wanted to talk about. You touched a bit on how you market. So let's go a little deeper into that and the reason I'm asking that is, you'll see these little, I call them wire signs. People will plant them in your yard and I go out and pick them up and throw them in the trash. Like, you did not have permission to do that. But you see these little wire signs on corners. It's like, we buy your house, blah, blah, blah. I always get a little bit of a skeevy feeling from those. So I'm assuming you're not doing that. But let's talk about
marketing. No, I don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's totally different with what I do in the note business versus what typical real estate investors do. Most of your real estate investors are sending out letters and postcards, or they're door knocking, or they're posting those signs on the corners. I don't do any of that because I'm not going after the borrowers individually. We're going after the banks. And so I have just built a list of contacts at banks, asset managers, secondary marketing professionals, the people at the bank that sell the notes go by a couple of different department names. So they go by special asset manager or secondary marketing manager. So I just reach out to those internal departments, and I've been doing this for years, dollar for dollars, or I pull lists off some different websites so that I can pull the information from. And I just send an email blast out once a month. I send an email out to 5,000 asset managers every month. It's a little bit different each month. So I've got my smiling face. So I've got my green logo. They call it the green email when they respond back. But every month we get a different list sent into us. It may be one list. It may be 10 lists. It may have one asset. It may have 1,000 assets on it. It just varies from bank to bank or institution to institution of what we get. And that's what we do. The bank sends us a list of their problem children. We take a look at these lists, and we'll cherry pick what we like. You know, sometimes it's buying one deal, sometimes it's making an offer on 100. It just varies on what's on their books. And that's what we target. I'm not fighting 50 fix and flippers in a community trying to find one asset. I'm also, the mindset here is, if you're dealing with a troubled borrower and you're going after them on the house or postcard, how many properties do they have? They have one. So when you finish with that deal, you've got to go out and hunt again and hunt again and hunt again. Me and what we do with note investing, we go up the chain, we go close to the source. So we go direct to the banks that have these lists every month, every quarter. So they're constantly feeding us new lists of stuff that we can cherry pick from. So it's a whole different marketing idea of what we do. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. It makes sense. I have something very similar for this podcast. Somehow, somewhere along the line, I became known as the author's podcast host, and I interview a lot of authors. I've got bookshelves full of books that I've read, and I mean, I love it. I love to read. I love, you know, authors. I mean, I just love the whole thing. But now, and I didn't go after it the way you did. If I'd been smarter, I would have a long time ago. But now I'm on multiple lists, and publicists, PR agencies. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will send me people every week, multiple.
Right.
And I get to cherry pick my guests, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I never have to go hunt.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing when it's being served to you versus you have to go on constantly and have to rejuvenate your leads.
Good way to put it. Okay, so I did have, you mentioned something, you know, when people are going after that kind of one person, I did have something that happened to me not too long ago it was on the skeevy meter as far as I was concerned. But I opened up my mail and there was this little note card from somebody who said, "Oh, my wife loves your house. She wants to buy it. How much?" What? You've never been in my house. I promise you, you've never been in my house. There is a sign. Scott, I'm not kidding. There's a sign on my door that says, because it's half glass, that says, if you were not expected or invited, do not ring the doorbell or knock. And I'm serious about it. And that's mostly,
so that is,
you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, that's you know, you're doing that to keep your, you know, people from knocking on there and soliciting you. Well,
soliciting, but you know what? It doesn't stop politicians, I found out. But I don't have to buy any more Christmas wrap. I don't have to buy, you know, cookies or anything like that.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Politicians, I will look them right in the eye and just walk on past them. It's like, how dare you? You can't read. But
right,
that's a whole nother story.
You're not, exactly.
But go ahead,
but
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's that. No, it's okay. There's a marketing technique called the yellow letter that a lot of has been around for years. That's what it is.
I was mad.
They do it. A lot of times they'll do it on handwritten yellow envelopes with red ink, and they'll just mass email. They'll just mass email a list, mass email zip code.
What happened was, me being a mean person, just so you know, I looked at that and went, there's something, I felt something off about it. So I went and looked this guy up. He's a real estate agent.
Yep.
Really? So I got a hold of his broker and raised 12 kinds of hell. I said, look,
well,
I don't know if it's legal or not, but it's skeevy. Don't ever let him contact me again. She couldn't apologize.
Well, it's just marketing play. It's just a marketing play, Denise. You got to realize that. I mean, if you were going to start off with something, you'd want to mass market initially, trying to find, hey, if you have a 1% response rate to 5,000 postcards or letters that you send out, you know, that's what, 50 leads? You know, that's what a lot of people are doing. They're mass marketing. I'm mass marketing banks. It's just that I'm not sending them a postcard. I'm just dropping them an email. And we get some letters back, or we get some emails back, like, please remove me or unsubscribe me, or why would I care?
Sure.
You know, that happens with the emails that I send out too. It's just mass
right.
marketing.
And that's going to happen
it's
no
just,
matter. But this guy lied to me, said my wife wants your house. Really?
Well, he does. She probably does, because they would love to have the 3% commission they're going to make on it. You know what I mean?
Okay, you just explained it too. Doesn't mean I'm not so mad about it, though.
No, I agree.
I'm holding
a grudge. No, it's okay. Yeah, but I get those letters all the time because we own a lot of real estate across the country. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you've never been in. I know the marketing play. That's awesome. Great. You're doing – you paid somebody to drop you 1,000 postcards or 1,000 letters. Or I only say it because I did that originally when I first started as a real estate investor. I would drop 50 to 100 yellow letters like that out in the mail every week, hoping that somebody would give me a phone call. And I would get people
and
mad.
It didn't work
I had one
that.
Guy. It worked. It works because if you do enough of it, you'll get 1 to 4% response rate. I mean,
oh,
I did have
geez.
A guy return a letter to me with some cow crap in it. It was kind of funny. I'm like, you.
It wasn't me,
like,
Scott.
You,
serious, it wasn't me. I would have thought of it, but I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. I did have one person return a letter with a glitter bomb inside of it, which is kind of funny, but. You know, it's marketing. You're not going to be
right.
happy on some things, but that's, you know, it just is what it is. I think you can do a lot better with marketing these days instead of direct mail with, like, Facebook and Instagram marketing and LinkedIn. There's so much better ways that are more cost effective and actually more effective in the long run anyway to market for real estate. So, but that's mm-hmm. funny. There's a lot of direct mail. I mean, that's where a lot of the real estate investors are still doing the most of their marketing is through postcards and yellow letters like that, because it's what's been taught by Ron LeGrand and some other of these real estate gurus for the last decade, 20
years. I've heard that name.
Years.
Yeah, he's been around forever, huh?
Yep, he sure has. Sure has.
Yeah.
And that's one of the techniques he loves to tell people to use. So.
Well, again, I mean, I'm keep going back to how did you, I mean, I know why you started, I get where you started, but how did you figure out how to raise private capital? That would be, I would think, nerve-wracking. It's like, okay, I can't do this on my own. I don't have $1 million in my savings account. How do I raise capital?
Right.
Where do I even start? How did you learn that?
That's a great question. That's one of the biggest fears of people is raising capital, because it's the same thing. They don't have the money. And they're scared to talk to people about what they're trying to do. And one of the most important factors is to realize this if you're going to be a real estate investor. A good deal will find money. And that's why we mentioned that you'd want to go to the local real estate investment.
That's important.
Good
say
deals,
that again.
Good deals find money.
Excellent. I just
if
wrote
it's a
that
good,
down.
If it, yeah, if you have a good deal and you market it, to your local real estate investors or to your email, to your database, somebody's going to have the money and will invest that way. We'll partner with you. We'll lend it to you at 8 to 12% return. There's a lot of money sitting out there. There's $7 trillion in retirement accounts right now. There's a lot of people that have a self-directed IRA that's sitting there making zero that they're waiting for somebody to tell them about a deal that they can lend on. Because there's a lot of people that would rather write a check than swing a hammer. You know, people don't have the time. They're working full time, but they do have the money, and they want to get an above average return than the pausely interest rate on a certificate of disappointment, a CD, or they've had their 401k turn into a 101k in the last couple of years with a downturn in the market. People want to invest. I mean, that's what I always say is that everybody's either a buyer, a seller, or a funding source, and they may not have the funds themselves, but they may know somebody who's got a 401k or an IRA that they're sitting there idly wanting to get started. But with everything, especially if you're going to invest, you always want to do your due diligence on the deal. You want to make sure that the value is there. You want to double check the paperwork or have an attorney review it. But I got started with raising capital from just sharing the deals that I was working on, sharing the deals that were coming across my plate. And one of the things when I started teaching the note business is that really was a way to help me raise capital. Was that people would, you know, they like the idea of buying debt, and then once we go through, like, well, that seems like a lot of work. I don't have the time for that, because most people don't have the patience today to do anything. And so they like, oh, I like how it works and stuff like that, but let me just write a check. You've got the systems, you've got the deals. Let me just write a check to you, and I'll make an 8 to 10% return on my money, which is better than I would get in the market these days anyway. And so that's what it comes down to. Is just if you go to your local real estate club, just most of them will allow you to get up in front of the audience. If you've got a deal, say, hey, I've got this deal at 123 Main Street. It's worth we're picking it up at $35,000. It's worth $70,000. It needs about $5,000 in rehab. I'm looking for a funding partner to fund this and partner with me on it. You know, that's one of the easiest ways to raise capital is just go to your local investment club and share. And there's often, too, a lot of, I think there's like 50, 55 self-directed IRA custodians or trustee companies in the country, and they often have networking events. And those are awesome events to go to find people that have money in a retirement account they're looking to lend. We do a lot with Quest Trust Company out of Houston, Texas, and they've got offices here in Austin and Dallas and in Houston. And we are always constantly going to their events because they'll have anywhere from 50 to 100 plus investors at it, and it's been just a phenomenal way for us to raise millions of dollars in capital for us to buy deals. But you mentioned something a minute ago about, oh, I don't have the millions of dollars to do it. You don't need millions of dollars to go start investing. I mean, we've done deals where we have zero of our own funds involved in the deal. It was all with other people's money. It's just that the deal, my capital in the deal was the fact that it was actually the property we were buying or the note we were buying. So in today's world, you've heard the probably saying, he who has the gold makes the rules. In today's world, the gold necessarily isn't the actual funding amount. The gold is actually the property or the note. Because that's what people are looking for. When we've had the market rebound like we have the last 10 years, a lot of people have money burning a hole in their pocket. There's a lot of money in the market right now looking for deals to invest in so they can make some money.
That is fascinating. Okay, so let's go back to your story a bit. I keep dragging you back. Sorry, but I'm like writing things down. I have a question. So you basically started this. I'm guessing just from the description of what you went through, divorce and, you know, losing everything and having these notes and trying to get out from underneath all of it, I'm guessing your credit took a heck of a hit. Would that be a good assessment?
That's very good assessment, yes, ma'am. And that's the beautiful thing of what I love about note investing and also real estate investing is most, unless you're going to go to a bank to get a loan, your credit is not a requirement.
This was my question, because I can almost hear people, you know, listening to this and going, well, yeah, but I don't have any money. I don't have any means. My credit is shot, but I would love to learn what you're doing. You know, how do I do this? So you're answering my question. So let's expand on that a bit, because I think it's important.
So that's the thing is, if you can go find a deal, and that's why you're getting those letters in the mail. That's why you're seeing those bandit signs on the roadways. That's why you're seeing people posting that they're looking for deals. They're looking for somebody to send them a deal because if they've got a deal, now they can go out to their database, their email list, or make phone calls to their investors that have money that want to fund those deals. There are specific lenders out there called hard money lenders that lend on a lot of real estate properties. They're called hard money because they're a little expensive. They may charge a 12% interest rate and 3 to 4 percentage points in fees in the front end, but it's a short-term loan of 6 to 12 months. And they'll lend at 65, 70 cents of what they call the after-repair value oftentimes. But they're not basing it off your credit. And, yes, it's a higher interest rate than like going to a bank, but it's not credit-based. And it's all about getting the deal done. And
I had no idea that existed.
Yep. There are hard money lenders that will lend in all states. There's also hard money lenders that just lend in specific areas. That's another resource that you would find at your local real estate investment club. Now, another
so everything
great place
points
to go
back
to
those clubs. I'm following you.
It does. They're kind of the hub when it comes to your local real estate market, your real estate investment clubs. Now, you can always go to there's a website called reiclub.com. It's run by a guy by the name of Frank Chen. It's a great resource for finding hard money lenders, to finding real estate clubs in your city and stuff. You could also go to meetup.com. And so, you know, meetup.com is free, and REIClub.com is free too. But meetup.com, you can just go in and type in your city and then type in real estate, and it'll pull up all sorts of real estate investment clubs all across the country, wherever your focus is, whether you're in Lake Charles, Louisiana, or you're in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can find local real estate investors that meet together on usually a monthly basis for coffee or breakfast or lunch or dinner, or just for 2 hours at night once a month to kind of network and you know, usually they have a topic, usually they have a guest speaker. But it's such a great way to network, to build your audience, to build your connections, and really help you not only locally, but if you're investing across the country, great place to go. So with us buying so many assets in different markets, we use meetup.com groups a lot to help us find realtors and fixers and even post deals in their backyard. Like, I'll give you an example. I've got a deal in Jackson, Michigan right now. It's a house that we've taken back where the borrower walked away from. I went onto a meetup group there in Jackson, Michigan, posted it. I had four realtors reach out to me who wanted to list the property, who wanted to be involved with it, and also found five investors who were wanting to buy the property. So all because of a free meetup.com posting. So now I found the buyers, and I found people helped me with the selling of the asset, and I'm, you know, here in Austin, Texas, without having to travel.
And you didn't have to travel to do any of this.
Yeah, that's correct. It's all done over a little tool called the internet and Google.
Yeah. I love the internet. I'm convinced. Seriously, Scott, I'm convinced that God made it for me. It's all mine, but I share it.
It should have been.
Yeah, it
should have been the worldwide Griffin.
That's right.
Worldwide Denise.
I'm telling you, and I'm one of those idiots that bought a computer before there really was an internet. It was a $3,000 boat anchor is what it was, but I had to have it. I just knew that I was going to build a living somehow on something that didn't really exist, but I had faith. And that's what it takes anymore is faith. You know, you have to know what you're doing, follow that path, and go all in, which is what you did.
Well, that's the thing is you have to be focused. A couple of things that are important to keep in mind, too, is that, you know, you got to be focused. One of the biggest mistakes real estate investors make is they run all over the place like chasing squirrels. You know, and it's hard when you're first getting started to figure out which focus and which niche of real estate investment you want to focus on. And a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to take workshop after workshop after workshop, and they never get a chance to implement any of the marketing or, you know, really work on anything. So, you've heard the Pareto rule, 80% of your income comes from 20% of your activities. And unfortunately, I see so many, it's not just real estate investors, but entrepreneurs are chasing multiple things. And they fail, they get frustrated because they don't see any results because they're not given enough time for those seeds that they're planning to germinate. They're not giving time for what they're learning to really take, grow roots and take hold in a market or let their marketing take over. So one of the biggest things I would tell you is, look, success doesn't happen overnight. Real estate investing is not a get-rich-quick scheme. If anybody ever tells you that, run, because they're just trying to sell you an educational package versus actually the content of it actually working. The note investing space is a build wealth over time thing. Real estate is building wealth over time, and you've got to keep that in mind. And not every deal is going to be a home run. Not every deal is going to be profitable. I mean, if you show me a real estate investor who's never lost money on a real estate project, he or she's probably only done a couple deals and not really gotten their feet wet. Because I've had deals that have been, you know, I've had deals that have gone out of the, I've hit out of the park. But my focus is I like to hit a lot of singles and doubles. I can hit singles and doubles, and I'll have occasional home run. I'm happy. That doesn't mean I don't strike out. I mean, I've had some great deals that made me a lot of money. I've had some horrible deals that I've lost money on. But the idea is that I learn more from my mistakes than I've ever learned from my successes. As the saying go, you can't fall on your face and fall backwards is the way I look at it. You're constantly failing forward, and you're making mistakes. And that's you're going to make mistakes. Understand that, but that's why you want to surround yourself with mentors. You want to surround yourself with people, like-minded people, and I that's why I'm a big fan of networking. That's why I'm a big fan of the real estate clubs. You know, if I do go to a different market, if I'm going to Orlando for a weekend or 4 or 5 days, I'll see if there's an investment club meeting one night, and I'll go by there. It's just a great way to expand my network and talk with people. And you never know when you're gonna build a connection, because in today's world, we're not 6 degrees away from Kevin Bacon. We're 1 degree away from anybody that you need.
This is true. And when you're talking about marketing, I'm an online business manager. I own a small digital agency. I do a lot of marketing for my clients. And I will flat tell them before I allow them to hire me, if you will, that, listen, if you think this is going to happen overnight, it's not. It's a long game. You are creating networking connections. You're making friends. You're finding business partners. It is a long game like anything else. You have to commit to be in it for the long run and for the right reasons. if you think you're going to make $1 million by the end of February next year, based on your social media marketing, you need to find somebody else because I'm not your person. So I totally understand what you're talking about. But you're right. You have to network. You have to make these connections. You have to really work with these connections and help them. They can help you. It's just good common sense. It's the golden rule, if you will.
It is totally the golden rule. You've got to follow yourself. I'm only able to do what I do because I have amazing team members and amazing staff. I started small. I was a one-man show, like most people do, and I added assistants. A good assistant in any type of business will help you make money. The best thing I can tell you right now out there is if you've got a goal, write it down. Write down your goal, post it somewhere, and give yourself time to accomplish those goals. So many people want instant gratification, and unfortunately, that's just not really the way that the world works. Yeah, not just in real estate.
No.
And in what you know, it's what you do, Denise. It takes time to build that up. And the best thing you can do is educate yourself. The best thing you can do, learn and get started. You know, start building that team. Start building
just
that.
Exactly.
Just take action.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. I posted something on Facebook the other day. I belong to several, Facebook groups. Hang on a second. The pollen is here. where people have invested, me included, in some very high-end courses. I'm in one right now with Tony Robbins. Those don't come cheap, but you have to take action. And I spent some time in one particular group, I won't say which one, and I mean the level of whining that went on in there. And I'm not a patient person. You probably have figured this out. And I'm thinking, why instead of getting on here and say, oh, I don't have time, oh, I don't understand, I don't know where to start, how about just shut up and do it? Yeah, I'm not patient at all. And, you know, you have to just do it. You have to tackle the good, the bad. You have to let it play itself out. But you have to touch it every single day. And I think that's what people don't understand. Like, there is no magic bullet. You must work it. And that's Monday through Sunday. It's not just, you know, I'm going to make a lifestyle where I only have to work 4 hours a week. You know the book. Baloney. Absolute horse pucky. So that's my two cents.
Well, that's the only thing
I'm off my soapbox
now.
I'm stepping down.
Well, that's it for everybody. You got to take time, got to learn it. It's just you got to give yourself time. I mean, they say you're not an expert until you've spent, 10,000 hours doing something.
Okay, yeah.
You just got to, that's why I say go out and network. There's a little thing called YouTube, with thousands and millions of videos on it. You know, we've got about 1,000+ videos on our YouTube channel for people to learn from our podcast episodes, from our coaching calls and webinars that we do on a regular basis. So if people are really interested in investing, that's a good place to start.
And I wanted to ask you about that because you have a podcast as well. And something you said way earlier was that, you know, when you're teaching people or training people, if anybody listening to this call right now want to connect with you and find out how they can learn from you, or I don't know if you have courses, talk a bit about that because people are probably going to be going, how do I reach this guy?
Good question, and I'd like to offer up something to the listeners, if it's okay. We've got a kind of an intro start book that I wrote about a year or two. It's kind of the starting point for a lot of people. It's basically, we've got a book called How to Buy Real Estate for 40% Off and How to Break into the World of Note Investing. I'd like to offer it up to your listeners for free if they're interested. It's 73 pages. If you go to noteblueprint.com/freebook, noteblueprint.com/freebook. You can download the 73-page ebook for free. It's like $19 on Amazon, but you can get it there for free. We do teach classes several times a year. Online workshops so that people don't worry about traveling. They're all done live. Our website is weclosenotes.com. You can find a lot of information out there, or you can check out our podcast called The Note Closers Show, which is on anywhere that you listen to podcasts. It's on YouTube as well. So those are the best places to reach out to us at.
And see, I love that you're doing this because it goes back into that whole marketing thing. You're not just operating in a vacuum. You're not wandering the country and in okay, I'll buy that one, and I'll take that one, and let's hope we can get rid of this one. You're actually creating this big networking, I don't know, kingdom, if you will, where people can find you, you can help other people, and, you know, you have giant credibility. So I hope people will take that to heart, too. You know, don't try to operate in the dark.
Yeah, because the only thing you're going to do in the dark is to stub your toe, and you don't want to do that. So, yeah, we've got a network of students. Same here. We've got a network of people all across the country. We've got an online Facebook group as well that's really interactive and just a great asset, not only for us, but for everybody that's a part of it as well. So we're just here to help anybody that we can.
I know that. Well, Scott, thank you so much. It has been, we're out of time. I told you this is the quickest 60 minutes on the internet. I have a lot of fun doing this every Friday. But it has been such a pleasure speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you share with the audience. And I encourage them to go find you if they're interested, even in the tiniest bit in real estate investing. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes or anywhere else, really, where you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Denise. Have a great day.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.